Howdy, regulars. This is Regular Dispatch 107. It's September 29th, 2020. There's never before been an age in which we could get so much done so quickly. There also has never been an age in which we were so overwhelmed with information and tasks, so overloaded with emails and things to read and watch, so stressed by the incredible demands of our lives. For many people these days, work is a constant stream of email, of news and requests, of phone calls and instant messages, of papers and notes and files. The day starts with an inbox full of emails and ends with an inbox just as full, and each email represents a request for information or for actions that we don't have time to fulfill. We're drinking from a fire hose of information with no idea of how to reduce the flow. It's stressful and wasteful, and if we stop to think about it, it's not how we want to spend our lives. What's the alternative to information and task overload? Must we follow the example of Thoreau and build a cabin in the woods, shutting ourselves off from society and modern technology? I propose a middle ground, one where we can still enjoy access to vast amounts of information, still have instant communication when we want it, still get things done quickly, but one in which we choose how we consume and do, a simpler life, but one in which we accomplish the things we want to accomplish. The solution lies in setting limits to how much we consume and do. It lies in making the most of our time by focusing on the most important things instead of everything. Picture a life in which you have a fairly peaceful workday, where stress levels are minimal, where you're able to focus on your work. Imagine that you only do a few tasks, but they're chosen so that they have the most impact. You accomplish major goals without the stress of doing everything at once. It might sound idyllic, but it's definitely achievable. I've done it using a system that's very easy to implement. It all comes down to making choices. I'm a firm believer in simplicity. My life is better when I simplify it. When I cut down on the noise and I'm able to enjoy the things I love, my work is better when I cut out the distractions and I'm able to focus. My writing is more powerful when I can eliminate excess words and use only those words needed to convey my core ideas. Simplicity means a lot of things in different contexts. For some, it means going back to using raw materials instead of manufactured ones, building and making everything yourself instead of buying it, doing everything yourself instead of relying on others. While that definition holds a lot of appeal for me, the simplicity I seek in my life is simplicity in what I do. Do less, not more, but achieve more because of the choices I make. Simplicity boils down to two steps. 1. Identify the essential. 2. Eliminate the rest. This is, I guess, from the introduction of a book called The Power of Less by Leo Babauta. It's really nice. I highly recommend the book. And here in the introduction, he outlines the principles. 1. Set limitations. 2. Choose the essential. 3. Simplify. 4. Focus. 5. Create habits. 6. Start small. One of the things I definitely remember from the book is one of many. These books, as you can tell, is from reading a few of them through here and in any browsing or reading you've done. It's all the same stuff. The principles are long-standing. He advocates, if you're going to go through a big habit change, let's say you suddenly decide you've got too much debt, you're not in great shape, you want to improve your skills, all these things, do not, New Year's resolution style, suddenly sit with a blank sheet of paper and spend all this time on the design of how you're going to change 48 things at once. Pick one habit, focus on it each day. And only after a pretty sustained period of time that you've locked that habit in, do you begin to focus on the others. And it does make you choose. I think it's interesting. So there's a feedback loop. I cannot find this book. There's a book called, I think it's just called simply Business Cycles. And I'll put a link to it in the show notes. It's fantastic. I may have to buy another copy. I cannot find mine. and I want to get to it. It's all about these cycles that play out, and a lot of the time it appears to be a monetary phenomenon throughout history. And you know, it's interesting in our lives, this idea of setting limits. Leo is talking about setting limits on what you're going to try to do today. This is similar, very in concert with the Ivy Lee method of, he advised Charles Schwab in the 20s, or maybe it was 1918, I think, to have his executives write down on a piece of paper the 6 things they were going to get done tomorrow, and then go do those things. Start and rank order them, and when you show up to work, focus on the first one. Focus on the second one. See how many of the 6 you can get done, any you can't get done. Then just simply reset for the next day. It's a great system. This is the idea of setting limits inside what each of us is going to do in a 24-hour period. It's very helpful. By the way, this idea of decluttering, simplifying, focusing on the essential, if we all did this, there would be no Today Show. It would not exist. It would be impossible because no one would watch it. Because talk about the superfluous, talk about the non-essential, there probably wouldn't be a CNN, certainly not as currently constructed and delivered. These things are clutter machines. They're noise machines. They simply are. So there's that level. Then you think about the level beyond yourself and what you're going to do today. The idea is, what is the balance sheet inside your head right now? What are the ideas, thoughts, goals, objectives, fears, hopes, ambitions in your head, in your heart, right now? Now imagine not just you yourself as an individual, but your household, kiddos, partners. You work in company, or you're a solo freelance person, you have clients. Now imagine all the exchanges there. Imagine your block. Imagine the city. Imagine the country. And think today the balance sheet of the ideas, thoughts, motivations, fears, ambitions, hopes in everybody's head. Think how much waste we're going to have today, what we're all going to squander today on the non-essential, on I should go find right now, if I could grab my phone here, there's some old blog post that stuck in my head long ago. I'll find it and put it in the show notes. I think I can remember some of it, but it had to do, it was a very simple little breakdown. The difference between problem solving and worrying about something. And problem solving, you kind of get moving. You address it. You take action. Worrying, you don't. You sort of rehearse it in your mind over and over. Problem solving changes things. Worry does not. Problem solving focuses on a dynamic future. Worry does not. It's sort of a static trap in the present. Something along those lines. The difference between problem solving and worrying. So we spend a lot of time on the non-essential. Worrying, once you've made that loop once or twice, now you're into a territory of pure waste, okay? So the reason I mentioned the book Business Cycles, I think that's what it's called. I should also search that real quick. Nonetheless, it'll be in the show notes and I'll get to it eventually. Even I have to go buy another copy, and it's for some reason like an $85 book usually instead of a $25 book. But it's worth the price if you're so motivated. If you have the means, I highly recommend it, as Ferris would say. The reason to talk about that is there is a feedback loop between our culture, the sum total of all the stuff that's in our heads and hearts, and the currency in which we live, literally. And the very interesting thing, one very interesting thing about the world we live in since, I think, August of 1971, formally, is a world of fiat currency. Now, what does this mean? I am not a gold standard advocate. I'm not going there necessarily. Put a pin in that. We'll come back to it later. Also, very tempted to go into some books and essays and white papers about the blockchain and something also like The Sovereign Individual, another very interesting book that touches on these topics. But I guess the crux of what I'm trying to mention this morning is a fiat currency means never having to say you're sorry. A fiat currency means never having to say no. It turns into a very, it changes the political ramifications of any kind of policy aims because it removes limits. It doesn't remove them entirely. It removes them from today. It pushes them into the future. You don't have to say no because, oh, sorry, we've simply run out of money. We've spent all the money. Now you can say yes and sort of create more money. And so these ballooning deficits and debts and the merging of money and money creation with debt, it's fascinating, right? And it's one of those things, it's the old adage of, what is the old story? I think it was presented in some David Foster Wallace commencement talk. It's an old, but he didn't invent it. It's an old, old sort of little story. It's the notion of these younger fish are coming along and an older fish says something about the water and the older fish goes swimming along and the younger fish turn to each other and say, what is he talking about? What is water? Like you just, these things that you don't see. And we have grown up, I have grown up, people my age, we've grown up in a world coded in nation states that have fiat currencies. There's no ever settling of the accounts. You just keep extending them forward in time. Now, arguably, there's lots of good reasons we got here, and it's been a time relative to other times in history of relative peace, relative prosperity, relative opening up more and more parts of that globe to markets and trade, and the global poor have advanced considerably in our lifetimes. These are all nice things. And yet, going back to the sort of fractal nature of this situation, like the currency just sort of moves through our lives. It's fungible in everything that you see around you right now. You can buy those things with money. And we all want to go, earn more money. That's how we sort of make a living, as it is said. So it's just very interesting, this notion of constraints and limits, focusing on the essential. And it sometimes certainly doesn't seem like the Fed chairman thinks that way, and even less Congress, for example. And it seems now the nice way with two parties is you've got to play the game is, well, you've got your ideas and projects. I've got my ideas and projects. Why don't we just fund them both? Let's just do them both. So it's a very interesting problem where we're headed. Now, back to all of us, like talking about recently about the intro of the book, Four Disciplines of Execution. The four disciplines are you focus on a wildly important goal. Then you come up with, you understand your lead measures and lag measures. Lead measures are the behaviors of the things you can do that advance you towards that objective, that goal. Lag measures are measurements you take, snapshots to see how well you're progressing. But once you take a lag measure, the goose is already cooked at that point. An example of, you want to get physically fit. So you might set lead measures of, related to calories or exercise, and lag measures as you stand on a scale, maybe. Or you go, run a mile and see how much faster you've gotten in running a mile, whatever your goal might be. Then you come up with a compelling scorecard, and then you have a weekly cadence of accountability with your team or your unit. That's it. That's the whole thing. Those are the four disciplines. Think about what it's saying. Focus on a goal, not five, not 10, not even three. They don't want more than two. They prefer one thing. Then you come up with very simple lead measures, not 19 things, one or two things. that you can make sure to do every day that advance your effort towards that goal, and then your team, and then other teams come together, and companies, obviously, big functional areas and things like that. A compelling scorecard is just so that the idea is that it's the old thing that if you want behavior, you measure it. You know, people respond to measurements. And so create your own compelling scorecard. Don't have it handed down from above. Create one that just the act of seeing it is going to help motivate you. And then this, the fourth one is so hilariously basic. Look at it weekly. Hold yourself accountable in front of other people. Did you do what you said you were going to do? And then fine tune it over time. It's like, well, I didn't get it done this week because of this and this and this. So how do we as a group handle that? It's that basic. Leo Babauta here is making a similar, has a similar sort of ideas, but focused on you individually. Don't change 19 things at once. Change one, get it locked in, and then focus on the next. With respect to the sort of non-essential and distraction and noise, again, going back to if we were all doing this, there would be no Today Show. There wouldn't be a CNN. Not as currently constructed, for certain. Maybe we're all doing it better than I think, because the ratings just get worse and worse. Partly that's because there's so much supply of entertainment and information that it's hard for anyone to command the audiences that they once did. But maybe we're actually doing better at this than I would guess, because although the idea is rattling around in the balance sheet of your head, and it might be right now, all these ideas about change that needs to happen in various laws and how things work. It might be related to the Supreme Court and a particular potential nominee. It might be related to transit here in Austin. That's a big debate right now. It's coming up for a $7.8 billion package or something like that. You might have that in your mind. There's all these issues you might have in your mind. As mentioned before, like, if they're in your mind, write them down. See what you actually, try to test yourself. See what you actually know about these things. And it's probable that you don't know very much at all. And it could, I think, persuasively be argued, you don't need to. So why bother? Why be a tourist in places like this? Is this a fun place to be a tourist, to hang out in these spots? Is this what you want for entertainment? Because that's what it is. You're entertaining yourself. And is that really essential and tied into where you're trying to go? Because meanwhile, arguably, what we don't need today, this literal 24-hour period in the United States, I don't know that we need a million people becoming expert on some Supreme Court justice. And when I say expert, kind of put the air quotes around that word. Because go spend all day today reading about this person. Get yourself worked up one way or the other. You're for this person. You're against this person. You're for a person getting nominated even with an election this close. Or you're not. Get yourself all worked up. Learn everything you can about it. What have you changed in the world? Arguably nothing. This is Michael Lewis quoting the president of Iceland. We all need to quit banking and go fishing again. Wouldn't we be better off if everybody, where you sit right now, you've got a few things you want to go do. You know what we all want? We all want you to go do them. Go do them well. And radiate out that discipline and that fun and that achievement in the small clusters of people with whom you are going to interact in the next 24 hours. Go do that. The world will have changed. We'll be solving problems. We won't be worrying about something. We will not be in this cul-de-sac of rehearsing these exercises, which, if we're practiced in the art of CNN and Fox, is wildly superficial and without foundation, structurally unsound, not well-grounded in knowledge, and certainly not knowledge backed up by action and practice and implementation and real feedback. So it's all pretty pretty cool stuff. I also have on my desk here this book, Organize Tomorrow Today. There are some passages from it that are very much in concert with Leo Babauta, but I think I'll save those for another day, days or weeks from now, and maybe try to get into some of the monetary fund and things like that soon. Have a good 24-hour period. Shed the non-essential as best you can, and we'll talk tomorrow. Thanks.